つぶやいて、こぼれ落ちて消えてく言葉はそのまま枯れに揺れるまま。
Welcome to this special edition of the Hackerspace Hour. It's special in a number of ways. For one, I'm not in the US anymore, but in Canada, in Toronto. Even more specially, I'm joined by Fish over in Japan. And Fish, good evening. It's morning here, it's evening there.
Yeah, we were struggling with the time zones already, at least to make the appointment to make the show, man.
yeah, it was a bit of a, you've got some guests over there, right? You're on a big trip of Japan, and well, who's there?
To give you a short introduction, we got Major Nick Farr over here.
Hi, Nick.
Greetings from Japan. Hackers on a Plane 4, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
A little bit tired and a little bit full of meat, but that's not unusual for these hacker things, is it?
Don't we have Elliot over here? Elliot, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
And we got somebody from Make Magazine, Matt Matz, over here.
Howdy.
And finally, last but not least, we got Guy over here, and he's from Belgium. You probably know him, GMC.
Oh, hey, Guy. Yeah, I know him. I've met him on a couple of occasions, indeed.
Hey, wow, GMC.
How are you doing?
I'm fine for the moment, fine with all these people over here, so...
probably GMC, they haven't saw you for a while, so everybody's asking how you're doing.
Indeed, yeah. I hope to meet up with Nick later, in because he started a new hackerspace, didn't you, Nick?
Yeah, unallocated space just north of Washington, D.C. in Severn, Maryland. I'm looking forward to showing you that and HackDC, the other hackerspace I started in the Washington, D.C. area, too. Because you haven't seen either one, if I recall correctly.
That's correct. It's my first time in North America, so I haven't seen any of the spaces. Well, I've seen about 20 now, but there's a lot more to go.
Yeah, you're looking, or you've got a lot to look forward to, the excitement on the East Coast.
Cool. Looking forward to that. So you're one of those serial hackerspace starters.
I just can't stop.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is a kind of addiction. Maybe it's a good idea to tell the listeners at least a little bit about Hackers in Japan, how it all started.
What have you all been doing there?
Well, the idea started, I think, about 1.5 years ago, Nick?
I think it was at the 24. It was actually at the 24 C3, so almost 2 full years ago.
Yeah, we come up with the ID together with Security for All. You know him as Benny.
I know him. Yep.
He's a totally geek about Japan. He loves everything in Japan. He loves the food, he loves the toys, he loves the electronics. He even loves the woman, I think, the women, I think.
He's going to live in Japan, isn't he?
Yeah, he's planning to. He's not here right now. Usually, I should have bring him in, but he stayed in Tokyo because he has to do some interviews. So everybody who's listening, if you know a job for Benny, he's in Japan now, just give him a call, or me, or whatever.
Find him on Twitter. That's probably the best thing to do. He's all about Twitter, just like the rest of Japan, apparently.
But we had some more people who were interested in Japan, and especially how the geeks are having fun over here with Akihabara, which is an electronic town. And, you know, Japan is very well known by all the electronics. And we had Eric Michaud on the team. He was also a fan, but he...
We're not bringing up the whole DC crew.
No, unfortunately not. I was also in Japan, and I was also enthusiastic about it. So that was the start. And then we started planning a bit. And, well, some people joined. What's the total amount now, Nick?
It's 10 people. It's 9 people at one time. But then when you got here last week, Benny dropped out of the trip to go look for work, and then you're joining us. So total of 10 people all in all, but only 9 traveling as a group at any one given time.
That's impressive. How many nationalities are in the group?
I think we've got 4.
We got people from Belgium.
Well, as far as citizenship anyway, we have people from the United States, Australia, Belgium, and the Netherlands.
And Vietnam. And Australia?
Yeah, I mentioned that first.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Okay, we have an American living in Vietnam who joined us on the trip. So how about that? So maybe we could call that 4.5?
Yeah.
Good enough for me.
So we got a very cultural different group, and it's good actually because we have a lot of discussions of what's going on over here, because Japan is also very different on this way how hackers are treating and how they're developing. And the total program was very different too. For example, we went first to AV Tokyo, and afterwards
we went to PAXSEC, and we're going to wrap up the trip going to Make Meeting 6 in Tokyo.
And yes. These are hackerspaces, or?
No, these are conferences. Most hackers on a plane are organized around conferences. Like the first one brought together DEF CON and the camp. The second one, of course, brought together PlumberCon and HAR, although most people join that one for HAR. Hackers on a Plane 3, we went to SIGINT in Cologne, Confidence in Krakow, and PH Neutral in Berlin. And Hackers on a Plane 4 in Japan brought together AV Tokyo, PAXSEC, and Make Meetings. This has far and away been the most eclectic Hackers on a Plane we've ever done, just in terms of the diversity of the participants, the conferences that we're going to, and the themes that we're visiting. And it's all, I mean, Hackers on a Plane Japan, when Fish and Benny came to me and approached me about it, they said, hey, look, Japan is awesome. We should expose, you know, all the hackers want to go to Japan at some point. Why don't we organize a trip, get it together? And also in the time since then, we've realized that Japan, for, you know, the world base of electronics and innovation that it is, doesn't have so many hacker spaces. So I guess one of the driving motivations behind this trip is to try to bring more enthusiasm around hacker spaces, support the hacker spaces there are, and to try to bridge hacker cultures together, just like, you know, we bridge together the U.S. and the European hackers and Hackers on a Plane 1. We're trying to make personal connections, which is what really brings groups together by doing Hackers on a Plane in Japan and touring around like we've been touring around.
We do realize, by the way, that...
Sorry, you do?
Fish coming to a realization.
I realize, now, we do realize that although we went to some places and so on, it's still difficult to make the bridge between us and the local Japanese hacker culture. We have some connections, AV Tokyo, for example, and the guys from Anchor Lab.
Tokyo Hackerspace.
Tokyo Hackerspace, of course. But if you're going to take a look on how the Hackerspace Tokyo is developing, they have a lot of Western people who are joining instead of Japanese people, unfortunately. And I had a good chat with them, and it's a cultural thing, and they don't know why it is, but maybe it's a thing from Japan, they want to do it themselves. But the thing, the people from Anchor Lab, they were evolving very nice, I think. They did invite us, and they were acting different than the most of the Japanese people.
Okay, yeah, but this is something I have been wondering. I mean, I'm over here in the United States. Culturally, Dutch people and North American people, it's not that much of a bridge, actually. Although there are some differences. I mean, there's been hackerspaces where people were walking around with a gun on their hip, for example. Well, you wouldn't see that in the Netherlands. But I imagine that in Japan, there's much more difference. Even the language can be a barrier, I guess, because well, we in Holland speak some English, so it's easier to communicate. How did all that go? How do you get around? How do you? Well, I'm curious about that.
Oh, well, I guess the first question I have is: so, how were the people over at the Black Lodge? It looks like you finally got a hold of them.
Oh yeah, that was that. I caught them at the bad time because they were just getting the last of their stuff from the old space and didn't move into the new space within a week. So there was no space really. I looked around the empty old space. But yeah, they were very welcoming and we were talking and we went to the, what's it called, the Olive Garden, one of the American traditions, I guess. And so we had some fun, but I didn't see their space, unfortunately.
Oh, wait a minute, but wait, were they the ones with the guns on their hip?
No, that was somewhere else. I think it was in Denver, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
But you assumed, yeah, I heard the Black Lodge people were also into guns.
Yeah, but coming back to your question, well, we were managing a lot, at least by having connections with the people from Hackerspace Tokyo. They were very helpful, at least in helping us out with a lot of information. Don't forget Benny, our Japan addict. He knows a lot about Japan, and he was able to at least give us some connections or helping us with setting up the schedule. And we owe him one on that, because he was really giving us a lot of details. For example, how you get a phone in Japan, or how you get your phone working.
Right. All those kind of things. He also does speak a bit of Japanese, does he? Or quite a bit, actually.
Well, we're also starting now to speak a little bit Japanese.
Konbanwa! What does that mean?
Good evening.
Well, good morning.
Benny, not tell us which transit cards work on both the Osaka subway and the Tokyo subway.
Yeah, but we find that. Isn't it?
With much pain, to me anyway.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go into that.
Hey, but talking about cultural differences, Elliot, you're setting up a hackerspace now in Vietnam. Well, at least you were thinking about it, and that's...
We're moving ahead with it.
We already talked about it. That's the first phase of setting up a hackerspace.
Yeah, I'm getting together a group of people. I've created a Google group as a mailing list for people to join. And it's up to 10 members. So it seems like people are excited about it.
And what's the name of the Google group?
Saigon Hackspace. So you can do a search on Google Groups for Saigon Hackspace. I don't know if there are show notes on the website. Maybe we can put a link to it on there.
We can put some show notes on that.
Or you can find it on hackerspaces.org.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not there yet, but I'll add it on that wiki.
When did the ID started?
Not really sure. I started thinking about it a little bit when I joined the Hacker Dojo in Mountain View, and that was my first real experience with hackerspaces. Coming on this trip, it became a lot more serious because I saw how easy it is, and everyone on this trip has their own hackerspace with their own stickers. And when we go visit other hackerspaces, everyone passes out stickers for their hackerspace. And so I think this trip has really encouraged me to really take the next step and make it a reality.
Sounds really good. And do you see the cultural differences between, for example, Europe and America and Asia?
Yeah, I think that there are certainly a lot of differences. For the Saigon Hackspace, I'm trying to get Vietnamese people involved. I'm also starting a company and hiring Vietnamese developers. So I think that's going to be one way to get people who are Vietnamese natives involved with the hackerspace.
Do you see the hackerspace's culture changing over?
changing in Asia?
Yeah, that people are daring to start a hackerspace or to come up.
This is going to be the first hackerspace in Vietnam. I noticed on hackerspaces.org that, you know, there are hackerspaces in Malaysia and in Singapore, countries around Vietnam, but in Vietnam itself, there are no hackerspaces listed.
Well, GMC knows how fast it can grow if you just start one hackerspace.
Oh, I've seen examples here in the US that are just been going on for 4 months and already have a hackerspace that some people take 3 years to set up. I'm also interested actually in other similarities in the hacker culture. I mean, hackers for me are curious people. For example, you give them a box of old electronic junk and they will dive in, find out what it is, find the use for it, and ask, do you have another box? Is this mentality also the same in Asia, or is there a difference there as well?
Maybe it's good to tell you a little bit about Akihabara. Akihabara is the old electronic town in Tokyo, and that town was actually founded by people who founded a lot of electronics from old war radios, and they were just getting out all the hardware stuff and reusing them for electronics, and that's the way why Akihabara became electronic town. Take a look nowadays, the electronic town is totally different. You can still buy a lot of electronics over there, but you will also find very large stores with all kind of laptops you have. And for your information, I think Akihabara, the center, it's as big as the shopping center of Den Haag, then with only electronics.
And, oh, well.
And maid cafes, of course, huh?
we're not bringing up the maid cafe, but
I think there are a lot of hobbyists in Akihabara. A lot of people who are building their own, they have their own projects and they're building their own electronics to do neat things.
Do you think Akihabara is almost a hackerspace on its own?
Well, no, it's a different thing. It's a place where you can shop for a huge variety of different small components, but people are kind of in their own silos. They take the parts back to their own apartment or their own workspace, and they don't really do a lot of collaboration.
It sounds like someone should start a hackerspace right in the middle of Akihabara.
Well, we agree on that, I think.
But actually, to get to your larger point about that, I think the differences and the similarities are two sides of the same coin. And what I saw going on at Tokyo Hackerspace, I think, reflected the two big problems, like, or at least one of the big problems that HackBC had. One, Tokyo, you know, people work typically late hours. And just like in Washington, D.C., there's the classic transit problem that once they get out of their work, they want to go home, and they don't usually have a lot of time between work and home to spend at a hackerspace, and typically don't have the more flexible work schedules that will allow people to either work from a hackerspace or to take a day off to do things at the hackerspace. The same thing on weekends, and then there's also still the transit problem on weekends, which HackDC overcame, and which I think the Tokyo hackerspace is starting to overcome by giving people a really good excuse to come out after work by running fun workshops and events. The auction that we did at Tokyo Hackerspace, just like the auction that happened at the Seabase 2 years ago, was a great time for everybody involved. Mitch had a wonderful electronics soldering workshop that he always does when he visits hackerspaces around the world, and a lot of people came out for that, and a lot of people came out for the auction. The other thing about the Tokyo Hackerspace is that it is a largely expat community, and you know, just trying to understand that a lot of people would say, oh, the Japanese are insular and it's a cultural thing, they don't want to mix. But I'm thinking if the hackerspace in my town consisted of people largely speaking a language that I didn't really understand most of the time, you know, I probably wouldn't be too prone to get there. And Tokyo Hackerspace identified that. And I think they're in the process of overcoming another cultural hurdle, just like hackerspaces around the world have had to overcome and have overcome a lot of cultural hurdles that they've had, and are going to start doing a lot more programming in Japanese, which is what you really need. Every hackerspace needs to respond to the particular needs and the quirks and the various differences that exist within their community and embrace them if they want to thrive and grow. And I think Tokyo Hackerspace is starting to do that. Anchor Lab, I think, is a good bridge between what Elliot was talking about people being very hyper-specialized and focused in doing what they do and spending, you know, almost days worth of hours focusing and concentrating on trying to build their one thing or learn more about their one particular area. Whereas I think Anchor Lab is a good example of how the Japanese are starting to take more of a hacker's approach, which is not siloing yourself out. It's looking and taking all these different bodies of knowledge and seeing what can be done with them when you combine them all together, because that's exactly what hackers do. Going back to your electronics parts analogies, you get a box of stuff and, you know, figure out what it is, figure out how it works, put it together and create something cool. And to do that, you need to sort of break out of the siloization, which really exists all over the world, but hackers have broken that in other cultures, and I think they're starting to break that in Japan as well.
To give you an impression about how the Anchor Lab looks like, we came in a room, and it's sort of quite large room, 100 square meters, Guy, you think?
Yeah, more or less, yes.
And what was the first thing you thought when you came in?
Well, it was lots of materials all around the space, and I would say it was a little bit different from our space. So I was really surprised when I came in there. But actually, I have the feeling that they are doing lots of projects and that they can build it within all what they have in the space. So I was really impressed by what they are doing over there.
It was a little bit like that when you're coming in and there are so much materials that you can just start picking up a piece of material, you've got an ID.
Yes. With every materials you can find there, I mean, you can do something, you can build something, and that was really impressive.
Our hackerspaces in Europe and in America, I think they're more structured and organized also in space.
It really depends, Fish. I've seen both ends of the spectrum, actually. Spaces that just have tools and materials and everything all over the place, interspersed with empty soda cans and whatever. And I've seen spaces that are really organized and have everything sorted in bins. So there's a lot of difference there in the US spaces as well. And I think in Dutch and Belgium spaces too.
Yeah, but I mean, there is really big difference between the space we have, I would say, in Netherlands and Belgium, than the space that was over here. So, I mean, it's completely different, organized completely differently. So,
for me, it was really a learning point that you can structure your space in space and make special areas where you can do things. But I was really getting motivated and actually I wanted to do stuff because I was so much resources over there. So there's something to think for me. Matt, you have traveled to a lot of spaces. Well, where have you been?
All over the Midwest. I actually just did a tour with Mitch Altman and Jimmy Rogers, where we went around and taught soldering workshops in, I think, 15 different places in the Midwest area of the US.
Oh yeah, people are still talking about it, yeah. I heard about it when I was in the Midwest. It's
What did they say, GMT?
They really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
Okay.
Nothing but good things. But sorry for interrupting. Please go on.
Oh yeah.
But you see, you recognize that you see spaces where there is structure and less structure.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the spaces in the Midwest were, well, not really, some of them were newer, but
Matt is really thinking now.
Well, tell us about Hack-Pittsburgh.
Hack-Pittsburgh, sure. I don't think of us as structured, but I go in there every week and change the way the space looks, I think, every week that I'm there, so.
It's changing.
Yeah.
That sounds recognizable. That's sort of what happens at my own space, a ref space as well. It's always, well, then this room has another purpose and that changes around. And it's all about adapting at the needs that the people have at that moment, right?
Yeah. Don't forget, total chaos is also a structure.
Certainly.
Hey, coming back to hackers in Japan, between all the conferences, we are doing some other things. For example, Nick was already telling, we went to Hackerspace Tokyo, did a fundraising, had a lot of soldering over there with Mitch Altman, and those activities are very nice to do as a group, and we learn a lot from each other. And the main thing is that bringing this tour, bringing the people together, should bring also nice ideas, and for example, which Elliot has, motivation to do more thing on his own hackerspace. Which is the main important part for you for the trip, Elliot?
The Hackers on a Plane trip?
Yes.
Well, this is actually my third time in Japan, but the first two times I came, I didn't see any of the hackers in Japan. The first time I came with some friends from college, we did a lot of sightseeing, and the second time I came with my family, and we went on a set tour and, you know, saw a lot of the popular tourist attractions. But this trip has really allowed me to see a completely different side of Japan. I get to see people who are building things, people who are, you know, actually collaborating and doing really neat projects. And so it's been really rewarding to see, you know, a country I've been to before, but a very different aspect of it.
I'm really wondering what the Japanese, is it Tokyo Maker Faire or Japan Maker Faire?
It's Make Tokyo.
Make Tokyo, totally different.
Sorry. But that's what they, it's the same thing, they just have a different name for it.
And the public which is attending, or at least the people who are going to show their projects, are they mostly Japanese, or are there a lot of expats too?
It's hard to say because I haven't been to one. From the photos, actually, the most of the photo sets that I've seen have been from expats, I think probably just because those are the people whose photos I could find. But it seems like, I think it's predominantly Japanese, and it's run by O'Reilly Japan, so I think that those people are mostly Japanese as well. So,
so it's mostly local people who are involved?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Well, this is a short impression about what we did on the hacker side. Of course, we're also doing lots of tourist stuff.
Fish, can I interrupt you there? I'm actually wondering, we didn't really talk about the conferences that you went to yet. We named three of them. I wonder how you fared over there. I assume these conferences were all mostly in Japanese, or am I mistaken here?
No, all of them had, they were mostly in Japanese, but all of them had a strong English-speaking component to them as well. There was live translation at PAXSEC because they had talks that were in Japanese and talks that were in English, so of course they had to be translated one for the other. AV Tokyo, which actually only Benny made it to, sadly, was also a mix of cultures, because that's the classic after-party for Black Hat Japan, which didn't happen this year, and so they managed to make a pretty neat conference of their own, and the prime movers behind AV Tokyo were also a really great help with the Tokyo Hackerspace events that we run, and we're looking forward to seeing them again when we go back for the Make meeting. But just from a security perspective, just taking a brief aside, it's really weird how security is different here in Japan. The threat model is entirely different. Corporations themselves aren't nearly as focused on security or securing their systems as they are in the West. And from what I gathered, a lot of the security work out here was largely for compliance reasons for firms that had business or contracts with companies from a more Western threat model focus.
Oh, now that's interesting, because we bemoan the lack of interest for security in Western companies, but apparently in Japan it's even worse.
No, it actually is a lot worse from pretty much everybody that I talked to with experience in both worlds in at PAXSEC especially. Another thing that was mentioned at PAXSEC was that they're very focused on the minutia and the paperwork, and it seems that a lot of employment here is in even a greater bureaucracy than we see in the government or in other larger corporations, shockingly enough.
Oh, that's interesting. And I'm also wondering, is it easy to hook up with people? I mean, for me, a conference is largely about the social aspect, meeting new people. I rarely see talks at conferences. But I guess since you have the perhaps the language barrier here, how did that work out?
It wasn't actually as bad as you would think it is. That even people who aren't fluent at all in English speak just a little bit, and there are enough people around who are very willing to translate. So that you know, it's funny. Actually, it was a Chinese person who was doing a lot of translating for me while I was at PacSec, and I had some interesting conversations with him. And yeah, while the barrier is much more intense than normal, it's not like the Congress where everybody speaks, you know, their native language and English. It still wasn't a total barrier to communication, and just having people around who were able and willing to facilitate and translate actually broadened a lot of the conversations to people who might not normally have been involved.
It really depends also who's in front of you, who you're talking with, because there are lots of people who are willing to talk with on their international level. They want to try their English. There are lots of Japanese people who don't want to try it because they think they're not good enough, and that's one of the thing. Yeah, which is from my perspective one of the most important parts.
I get the impression that English, at least certainly here in Asia, is more of an international language than any other language. In Vietnam, all of the students actually have to take English in school. So, all of the younger people in Vietnam have some knowledge of English, even if they don't speak it very well. A lot of times they can write and read English quite well, and so I can easily communicate with them, you know, through Instant Messenger.
The funny thing is that one of my friends I've met 3 years ago when I was here in Japan, he's very good in writing, but if you talk to him, he's always saying, "No, I don't have enough confidence to talk English that way." But I think it's in multiple countries.
As for me, I was really impressed that I was able to find people that can talk worse English than me, so I was amazed.
That is quite an accomplishment. So, yeah, so I'm interested in bridging this gap between the two worlds, actually, because in the open source community, you see this the same people from Western cultures and the Asian cultures working on the same project. There usually is not a lot of communication between them. So do you guys think English is the way forward? Or
I think so it is. Mainly because of the computer industries is also bringing lots of more communications to each other. And 3 years ago I was in Tokyo, and now I'm again in Tokyo, and I see Tokyo is also changing on the way how they, for example, do their advertising. I see more Western words and just regular letters on commercials, for example. So I see a change over there, and I see Japan is getting more Western in on that part. Yeah,
but I'm gonna have to disagree just a little bit. I think it's not. There isn't one way forward, and that we should all get behind English. I think it's just as much a responsibility for native English-speaking hackers to try to learn a foreign language and to try to gain an understanding of a foreign culture and to travel more, just like we're doing. You know, sadly, I regret this, but I wish I had learned much more Japanese on the trip. And another person, Rod, from San Francisco, is quite well, not fluent by any stretch of the imagination. Does have enough Japanese to communicate, and it seems that when he communicates with people or makes a good faith attempt at speaking in Japanese, that it's very well reciprocated. Pretty much everywhere we've gone, and we've hit most of the major parts of the country on this trip already.
You're right about the fact that people are reacting very, very positive on the fact that you're at least trying some Japanese words. For example, ichibiru, one beer, please.
which actually is another another good. While I'm not necessarily partial to bring it up, but that is, you know, going out and having parties with people is a good way of bridging that gap. I think the AV Tokyo guys definitely proved that. The after party that I went to for PacSec also proved that. That sharing food and sharing drink and sharing a good time with people will melt away even the most difficult of cultural barriers.
How was it with your visit today? The visit from today, you went to the guys from...
Oh, yeah, Neo, we went to EC Studios, and that was actually a fascinating Japanese cultural experience.
Yeah, EC Studio is a Japanese company that is trying to revolutionize the way that work is done in Japan. They like to bring people in to take a brief tour of their new office, which they moved into fairly recently. It's actually a building that they built just for their company. They are doing some pretty innovative things that are different from other companies here in Japan. People have computers with three displays. They try to use electronic communication rather than paper. They have a video conferencing system that uses a PlayStation 3 and is on all day and connects with their office in Tokyo to here in Osaka.
But they have a history in America, I thought.
The reason that we even managed to visit their offices here in Osaka was because they've reached out to hackerspaces in the U.S., that they've gone to visit Noisebridge, and I believe they also paid a visit to the Hacker Dojo, and they contacted Mitch and said, hey, we know you guys are going to be in Japan. Would you like to come, you know, see our progressive offices? And actually, at first, we didn't really know what to make of the request, but a couple of us went over there, and we're actually quite thrilled and quite blown away with what we saw and how dedicated they were to changing the culture in Japan. And I think that is one of the many things that hackerspaces try to do, is they try to change the game and change the culture, be more inclusive, be more adaptive, and to try to bring people in. So I know even though it was a corporation, I still thought that it was cool that they incorporated some of the hackerspace ethic into what they were trying to do.
So the song we just listened to was by Shako Pani, and the title, I hope I pronounce it right, Hida Sutetsupo. So you've seen a lot of hacker conferences, some hackerspaces. What I'm wondering, did you get, I'm trying to make some time in my trip to do this, to see some touristy things. I fail hard because I've only got 6 weeks and I have a lot to, of hackerspaces to visit. Do you get around to visit some tourist attractions? For example, there's a whole Dutch village, I believe, with all kinds of stereotypes.
Yeah, there is somewhere in Japan. I don't know why, where. Or
I'm from Holland, Michigan, so I can get. Or I mean, I'm from near Holland, Michigan, so I can get stereotypical Dutch things. I can see the windmill and the tulips and the.
Yeah, but they get
the time whenever I want.
They got rebuilt windmills over here in Japan. Eh?
They have the same thing in Holland, Michigan.
Whoa.
Could build a real earthen dike out into Lake if they let them build one out in Lake Michigan, they would.
There are actually a lot of Dutch people in Vietnam too.
Okay, I'm surprised.
Yeah, kind of, see, all the Dutch got out. You know.
Yeah, actually, my current host in Toronto, he's from Holland as well. So beware, we are taking over the world.
To answer your question, GMT, yes, we're also doing some very nice visiting.
As Fish keeps trying to point out, I had a couple of deer on the island of Miyajima make very good friends with me after I accidentally fed them one of my corn chips. You know, I was just eating corn chip. I had in my hand, boom, deer comes out of nowhere. And that's the thing. You know, every place you go or every other place you go, they'll have some weird sign saying, you know, watch out for the wild animals. But there they were right there in Miyajima.
Actually,
and the deer followed me halfway across the island waiting for more corn chips.
Actually, the warnings about the deer were quite funny because there was a warning that you have to take care that they were not eating your train ticket.
That's some pragmatic advice.
Yeah. But it was a kind of painful experience for Nick because when he was walking with the deer behind himself, he tried to shot it and the police arrested him. So we had to save Nick Farr. But everything came up and we were able to catch the final.
Somebody please kill that joke.
Like, yeah.
It's 2 years old now. It's time we bring it to close. I am saved. There's nothing more to that. There's no shooting, no arresting. No need to save Nick. Someone deregister the domain name.
But maybe you could tell a little bit about the details where we went and what we do and
I think the first week we mostly visit Tokyo. We went all around. I think we have done some visit to Akihabara. That was a really interesting place. Then we went to see the Fujiyama from far away. Unfortunately, we got some clouds, so it was not probably the best day to visit it. But it was kind of very nice. And then the second week, I mean, we went to do some biking events in Kyoto. Yes, when we got the opportunity to visit plenty of nice places. I mean, Fish can talk probably about it a little bit.
Kyoto is really, really cool by bike, and if you're going downhill, you should be careful. Now, and we also went to Hiroshima yesterday, and it was very impressive, in my opinion. Yeah.
I mean, from an historical point of view, I mean, that's a very nice place to visit, and we really got the opportunity to spend some time over there. We even got the time to go to the museum, and I mean, it was very impressive, at least for me. I mean, I don't know for the others, but I mean...
Hiroshima, they're... I think they're very on a very positive side how they're doing everything, but they're still having in mind what happened over there, and that's a good thing too. And afterwards, we were able to blow off some steam, and we took the steamboat to Miyajima, which was very interesting too. Where there's the part where the deer followed Nick actually.
Don't forget about the five-story pagoda. That was pretty neat. And the floating temple.
True.
And the world's largest rice scooper, wooden rice scooper.
Oh, you know what I saw in Detroit? The world's largest tire.
the Uniroyal tire. Is that still there?
It is.
You have to put that away.
Does it still have a nail in it, or did they take the nail out?
I didn't see any nil in it, so I think they restored it. It's actually right by the freeway. There's no way to really get to it, so I didn't get a chance to actually stop and take a close inspection. But
well, it's on the way to and from the airport, so.
The nail is not in your rental car now.
No, but I do have another nail from a railroad track in Nevada actually. So I hope there will be no derailments. But yeah, that's actually Nevada. I wanted to go there to the previous nuclear test sites because that's where they tested the nuclear bombs. Whoa. Of course, they actually tested them on the local population there. You know, just set off a bomb and see what it did with the local townspeople.
Whoa. That's heavy, actually.
It is, yeah, it's quite unimaginable. So yeah, on that sad note, let's listen to some more Japanese music. Actually, the song we played in the beginning, the title of that song is Kotoba Ha Sono Mama. The artist is Hanadix. Well, I probably pronounced it wrong, but someone will correct me if they are offended. The next song, I have got no clue what it's called. I downloaded it from waka.fm, W-A-C-C-A.fm, which is actually sort of a Japanese Jimendo. It's a site with Creative Commons music. Well, the name of the file name is actually Hanaki. It's number 20027 on waka.fm.
Hey, what so far so good. Yeah, this is a little bit what you have done. And we still have some plans. So we still got the Maker Faire, which is a 2-day experience at the
Ugiyama campus of the Tokyo Institute of Technology.
Yeah, and people are going to show their projects and what else are we going to do there, Matt?
I think there's what's a traditional Maker Faire? There's talks, there's projects, there's people showing their stuff off. I think workshops probably too.
Yeah, there's workshops in Exhibitors Hall, and actually Matt, Mitch Altman and I are going to be speaking at we're going to be giving one of the talks there at the Make Meeting Tokyo 6.
Which day?
And teaching people how to solder.
Well, yeah, anywhere Mitch goes, he's going to be teaching. Actually, Mitch, on this trip, a bit of a confession to make. I've never actually, of all the hacker spaces and the hacker conventions I've been to, I've always been too busy organizing or doing something. I've never actually managed to solder a project or a kit together, and so I soldered my first kit.
All right,
under the instruction of Mitch at the Tokyo Hackerspace, so I was very proud of that. Mitch is a great instructor.
Did you get your soldering badge?
I did get my soldering nerd merit badge.
It's not sued on your suit.
I'm not going to sue it on my suit.
Why not?
No.
Okay, at least do it on your Open Solaris hat then.
No, I'm not. Actually, maybe, I don't know, would a bunch of nerd, yeah, I guess maybe this would be good for nerd merit badges. I'll have to do that for you.
So, how long are you guys gonna be there still?
The European contingent leaves on Sunday, and the rest of us leave on Monday, the 22nd and the 21st. So we've only got a few more days left. We go back to Tokyo on Friday.
Anything special planned for your last days over there? Anything to visit?
Well,
tomorrow we're gonna go see Nara and hopefully spend some time in an onsen.
Yeah, and don't forget. Our way back is going to be with 250 kilometers an hour on the railway.
Oh wow, you're gonna ride the bullet train, that's cool.
Yeah, yep. Shinkansen rules, man.
Yeah, we've been taking bullet trains everywhere. We took a bullet train here, we took a bullet train to Hiroshima, some of the people that went up to Kyoto took a bullet train up there.
Do it every day.
Yeah, you know, we've got the Japan rail pass.
Do you have those in them?
Yeah. And actually, I hope you don't mind if I could make just a quick plug. You know, we're on Hackers on a Plane 4 right now, and Hackers on a Plane 5, you can jump in on it right now. And also, it turns out that I booked most of a hotel only 1.9 kilometers away from the Congress. And
it's in Berlin, right?
This is for the 27C3, this year's Congress. And the hotel person and I are actually currently talking about getting the whole hotel to turn it into a hacker hostel, because remember, you and a bunch of other people from the Netherlands stayed at my hacker hostel last year, so.
Yeah.
Yep. This actually is the Pension Rider, which is a lot closer. It's within walking distance or one U-Bahn stop away from Alexanderplatz. So if you want more information on that, or if you want to see pictures, videos, things like that of the trip, hackersonaplane.info is the website, and I'll stop my plug now.
Okay. Hey, talking about 27C3, Signal will be there, of course. I will bring the mobile studio that we have at the RevSpace, and we will do a show live from the conference venue, a 2-hour show. I will be joined by the various hosts of other shows. For example, Astera will be there, Social Hack will be there, many others. I hope we can also get Emmanuel Goldstein from 2600 off the hook on there. And well, reflect on the conference. I hope some of you will also be there. Well, Fish won't be, unfortunately, but there will be much more people that you've heard before, and we will have a fun show. Well, having said that, this show is rapidly coming to an end. We're almost out of time. So, what I wanted to mention, next week there will be a new issue of DevRandom. Probably you will do that, Fish, live from the Netherlands, and it will be followed by another hour, Hackspace Hour from the USA, with yours truly. Yeah, so what else am I going to do? I'm halfway of my trip in the USA now. I'll be continuing to New York and then down the East Coast. And actually, on the November 30th, That's going to be a shuttle launch near Florida. So who knows, maybe I even get to visit that, because I will be in the area that time.
Going to the launch of a space shuttle. Awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's actually the last shuttle launch, the last one that's going to be launched. So that's I can only visit it from a distance. I don't have any first class tickets or anything, but it still will be cool if I make it.
Yeah, let's hope that the space shuttle is not going to be Challenger, by the way. I will talk to you next week then on the Vrendum show. And everybody here, Guy, Elliot, Nick, and Matt, I really want to thank you for this awesome trip and joining you in the show. And I think we still have some days left, and we're going to have a lot of fun. And I will give you the final details on the Dev Random show. So this was Fish live from Japan. Well, almost live. with Signal.
I just checked his pulse. He's still alive.
He's still alive from Japan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for being in the show. See you.
Bye-bye.
So that was the Hackerspace Hour for today. My name is GMC. I was coming live to you from Canada. I was joined by Fish from Japan. And to end this special, we go to a bit of music from Japan. It's a song called Azutata 50 by the artist Quarta 330. Thanks for listening and until next week.
Working hard to make a few shillings, and we are doing it willing. Son, why if you want to start the killing and the blood spilling?